Survivor's Guide to True Crime includes discussions of sexually based violence and is not intended for children. Information provided should not be used as a substitute for professional medical or legal advice. Please exercise discretion and self-care.
Welcome back to Survivor's Guide to True Crime. I'm Kim.
And I'm Kara.
We are very excited to bring you our guest today. It is still October, which means that it's Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and we are very honored to be joined by a domestic violence survivor.
Our guest today is Kayla Hayes. Kim and I both became aware of her and her story through TikTok. As you guys know, that's often one of the places that we make connections with other survivors. So let's tell you a little bit about Kayla. At just 25, Kayla Hayes is a passionate advocate, speaker, and author who embodies resilience. Having faced the challenges of childhood sexual abuse and teenage domestic violence, she made a powerful choice to transform her pain into purpose, embracing her scars as wings of strength.
Kayla's story has resonated widely, earning features on Inside Edition, Cosmopolitan Magazine, and on various national platforms dedicated to empowering survivors. Through podcasts, interviews, and impactful speaking engagements, she raises awareness about domestic violence and empowers others to reclaim their identities.
A pivotal moment in Kayla's journey was the realization that her experiences did not define her. Rather, they could be a source of strength. This insight drives her mission to inspire young people to heal from their past and see their scars as symbols of hope and resilience. She believes that by sharing our stories, we can create a supportive community that uplifts one another.
So I will say, as we get into this interview, this was one that we have both been looking forward to for a really long time. And it's important to remember that just because we have survivor-facing personas online or on social media or wherever, some days are tougher than others. And we can go through our speech, our story, what has happened to us over and over. And then every once in a while, there'll be that time, that day, that engagement where it's tougher than others. And we are very honored to share this space with Kayla as she was having one of those days and was still able to go through with having this conversation. So it's going to sound a little different than what we're used to, but this is the very authentic and real reality of what survivors face every single day.
And honestly, I think that Kayla did a great job. I think it's so important to show these moments. And we are just so grateful that she decided to share space and her story with us. And we hope that you will just see her heart. She is such a kind, gentle, just amazing woman. And I cannot wait to see what she is going to accomplish because she's already done so much in her life at such a young age. So without any further ado, here is our interview with Kayla.
All right, Kayla, thank you so much for joining Kara and I today. I am thrilled to have you on. I have been looking forward to this conversation for a very, very long time.
Thank you so much for having me. It's such an honor and such a pleasure to be here, and I'm so excited to speak with you both.
So we always start with an icebreaker. Enter maniacal hand. Yeah, I always think that people are going to have PTSD from school when it's like, here's our icebreaker, stand up and say two truths and a lie about yourself. It's nothing like that. So our icebreaker is just, what is something that you've been binging recently?
Well, first of all, y'all's podcast.
Both
are amazing in your dark humor. Absolutely love it. I've been watching Nobody Wants This on Netflix. Obsessed.
Okay. What is it about? But I see who's in it, but I'm like, what is it even about?
Seth Cohen. Forever and always has my heart.
The girls. Of course, you're going to ask me that. And it's been like 2 days since I've launched.
Adam Brody. Are you familiar with Adam Brody? He played Seth on The OC.
Obviously, I know who he is.
He is a rabbi. And I'm only halfway through so far. So no spoilers yet. But it's a woman and a rabbi. And they kind of find each other. And it's a love story that, from what I can tell, is healthy and they have great communication, except everybody on the outside, it's like breaking these societal norms. I don't know. How would you describe it?
Yeah, well, she runs the sex podcast with her sister. And so she's dating the rabbi. So it's just, just really interesting to watch.
I was like, I need to know, like, what is the, I guess, the conflict here? Like, you know, because every show has to have like a conflict. And I guess that's it. It's like, I run a sex podcast. He's a rabbi. So I got it. But yeah, they're both very lovable actors, actress, Kristen Bell and Adam Brody. Very lovable folks.
I've liked how much they find that they have in common, even though they come from very different backgrounds and cultural upbringings. And it's everyone else around them saying, no, this isn't good, when actually the inner workings of their one-on-one relationship, from what I can tell, only halfway through, is very healthy and positive. And I know that it's based on a true story. So the actual woman in the relationship is one of the producers.
Oh, that's cool.
All right. So Kayla, tell us and our listeners a little bit about your background, your story, and as much as you'd like to your comfort level.
Yeah. So it has been a while since I've talked about it really in detail. So bear with me. I always go through these phases where I am like really headstrong into it and then kind of back out for a while. So I grew up in a single parent household. It was always just me and my mom. She's always been my best friend growing up and, you know, just always showered me with love and just did the best she could, you know, for a young teen mom. I grew up, I would say, pretty outgoing, and I was into sports. I always danced or played soccer or ran cross country, just things of that nature. So I always was pretty athletic, I would say. May not have been the best at it, but, you know, I still was out there doing what I could. But as a child, I would spend a lot of time at my grandparents' house. It was on my dad's side. It was his mom and my step-grandfather. From what I remember, at a very young age, I had all the things I could possibly ask for. They lived on a river, so it was a really fun time, and it's where I would go and see my half-siblings and really just got to be a kid. But then I realized at the age of 12 that something was wrong. I was playing soccer and my best friend at the time was on the same team as me, and I just started withdrawing from everything. I just, you know, felt like I was living a lie almost. And I think I told her that and she had mentioned it to my mom. And I don't even think at that time I realized what that meant. Anyways, I got in an argument with my mom and come to tell her I had been being sexually assaulted for quite a few years by that step-grandfather. So it was really hard. You know, I lost my family at a very young age because at that point they were like the only blood family that I knew, really. So I just kind of lost them at a young age and dealt with a lot of self-hatred because of that. My mom rushed me to the cops immediately and made me do like a victim impact statement and all that, filed a report. And I sat on a desk or under a desk, I guess, for till like 2018, 2019. So quite a long time. So I never really got justice for that. So it just kind of pent up into a lot of hating myself and insecurities and all of that nature. At 17, I got into my first relationship with a male that was a little bit older than me. I just thought it was really something special. But 11 months later, it led to me being full of stitches. That is when I realized the impact that my childhood had on me. I feel like I lost my self-worth so much that I just accepted the first thing that came along. And I would say the first thing I noticed was that I started withdrawing from sports. I had always played sports up to this point in my life. And this was the time that I gave up on everything that I loved and that made me happy. I never really thought about what a healthy relationship or healthy love looked like. So I didn't know what I needed to look out for, really. And it's really interesting now because I'm doing an advocacy training at our local department up here. And just the stuff that they bring into the schools, had I known just the smallest thing, just the bad talking about my mom or my friends or what I was wearing, you know, like, it's insane. Like, my life would be completely different. I feel like there was times that we'd get in arguments and I would just shut down. And, you know, one second we're sitting at a table, the next second he's trying to trip me down a hill for no reason. And then we were drinking, you know, as young kids, and I'd end up with a black eye or a bloody nose or things like that. But he never physically just flat out punched me. So I wasn't abused, right? I just didn't know what it was. I thought just stuff that happened. Long story short, we did break up about 11 months in, and a month and a half later, we agreed to have one last meet. He said he was going into the Navy, and so it was kind of like just a chance to right wrongs and just move on. But I had this really weird gut feeling that morning, and I was like trying to come up with excuses not to meet him, but he said he would show up at my house. So we met at the end of my street, actually. And this was a point in time where my mom was on her first vacation without me. So I was home alone. Like, I knew if he showed up at my house, like, I was just, you know, just a bad situation. So I agreed to meet up with him, and I went and met him, and just something felt off. I parked, like, he was in a parking spot right here, and I parked facing him next, like, one over in front of him. And I got out and I got into his car, and he had flowers and cards. And it's really interesting looking back now, because the card read something about, I believe in kisses that last forever. Because then I got in, it was just like, it was just very hostile. And long story short, I just said, I'm not here to get back together with you. And he told me to get out of his car. And to this day, I still remember the anger in his voice. And just, like, it was just such like a scary moment, but I didn't realize how bad it was going to be. Anyways, I got out of his car and I got into mine. And next thing I know, he's in my driver's side door. He's opening it up and he's leaning over and he just latches onto me when I refuse to kiss him. I literally haven't said these words in so long. It's just, it's insane to like just sit with it for a moment. He latched onto me and he ripped my lip off completely and, you know, just pulling me out of the car, ripping my shirt from top to bottom and just slammed the door in my face and took off. Cause I got lucky that day. It was in a condo complex. And there was a gentleman, which is my guardian angel, I swear it to this day. He was out there taking his trash out and he heard my yells. And he came to what I would say was my rescue. Cause I just remember looking at my leg and literally picking my lip up off my leg, just thinking like, how did we get here? You know? I don't know. I'm just forever thankful for the gentleman that saved my life that day.
Thank you so much for sharing that.
Thank you. Yeah, it's so hard to hear these stories and it's so hard to relive them. And so we thank you for that and we honor what it's taking for you to just kind of relive that. And I think that a lot of people are going to hear what you said at the beginning, which is that partially you felt like your past predisposed you a little bit. Mm-hmm. To getting in this risky relationship. But also it's this idea that I should have known better, right? Or if I had known what I know now, and I am grateful that there are people like you sharing their stories because that's how we go on to mentor the next generation so that hopefully they don't get in situations as well. So hopefully they can see some of the warning signs.
And even as you present this and talk about it and give words to things that no human should ever have to experience, it's almost as if we want to help. We want to keep that person safe. And yet you know that you are cruising towards this ultimate, you know, it's a crime. That's what brings all of us here to this platform eventually. And it's as if you can't stop it, no matter what you did, no matter what your background was. You could have had the most idyllic, perfect background, upbringing with no crime. And still, it's possible that we find ourselves in those situations. And being able to let go of any kind of shame that you may have about how you ended up there. We think about that a lot. Kara and I talk about it a lot, about this is what led to this. But when you look at us in totality, any survivor, none of us chose to be there. There's nothing that made that offender offend except their choice to do so. And that's what I keep coming back to is no matter what that story is, no matter what background you share, that was his choice and his alone. So what did you do from there?
So in that moment, I literally just saw red. I mean, I've been through numerous procedures and everything like that to try to repair what he had done. But honestly, at the end of the day, it was, you know, I've got scars on the outside, but I've got scars on the inside too that hurt even worse. As hard as it's been to repair my face, I've literally spent the last 7 years now repairing what the damage was done on the inside. And this month is actually the month that it had happened. So it's just, you know, the anniversary coming up. So again, if I get a little emotional, I'm sorry. But I started speaking about it actually like 7 months after it had happened. He was out on an ankle monitor and I had heard he had a new girlfriend and I was freaking out. All I wanted to do was to save the next girl. So I think that I was telling myself, you're fine. You're fine. You're going to get through whatever you're dealing with. All you have to do is save that next person. So I started sharing on, I think it was Facebook actually, was the first platform. And it got a lot more attention than I like thought. And everyone related, you know? So I feel like I found a lot of healing in continuously sharing my story. Whether I can articulate how I'm feeling or not, I feel like that's how I've gotten to where I am today, is sharing and connecting and just spreading as much love as I can, honestly. Obviously, I've had my bad days and where I don't want to get out of bed. I don't want to talk to anyone, you know, I don't want to face the world because some days I still feel like a monster. But at the end of the day, you realize that this happened for a purpose and you're still here. And sometimes you have survivor's guilt for still being here, but you just have to put use to what your story is and share it.
I love that you brought the attention to something that we haven't talked about specifically in this podcast, but I think is something that is very common. And it's that very often after we survive a toxic and abusive relationship, we try to save the next person. And I have a friend who actually just shared about this herself publicly for the first time, her experience in that. And her words were basically, if there's one thing that I can tell the next generation, it's that if someone comes to you and says, hey, this is my experience with this person, they manipulated me, they mentally abused me, they physically abused me, to believe them. And I think that's such a valuable message. And it goes right along with all of our messaging, which is like, start by believing. But it can be so hard because I imagine had you been warned before entering that relationship, you would have been like, oh, she's crazy, right? Like, I think that that's the mentality that we often kind of pass things off when we're in a new relationship and we're being love bombed. So I'm glad that you spoke to that because I think that is something like I did that with my talk, right? Like we've all done that.
Slowly raise his hand.
Right. We need a little flag. But it's this girlhood, this womanhood. It's like, I don't want that to happen to you. I don't want you to join me in this.
And it's really interesting you say that because, I mean, there was before me. It didn't start with me, you know?
Right.
But it was always, oh, well, they slapped me, so I slapped them back. Or, I mean, the way we got started, it was a red flag. he was arrested for public intoxication. But of course, it was the other girl's fault for causing the scene or whatever had happened, you know? Not my business to speak on, of course, but it was just always somebody else's fault. So there is a before you, and I was the one that didn't believe, I guess, if you want to say. And I have never thought of it that way until you just said that.
We think back on that quite a bit is, yeah. If someone had come to you the same way that you are trying to do, would you have listened? What could you have done or what could you have said to break through that barrier and tell you at that point, hey, listen, take me seriously? And we don't always have an answer.
Yeah, absolutely.
You were, did you say 17 when this relationship started?
17.
Yeah. Tell us about the work that you do now and how you do outreach and education in the time since you were that 17-year-old girl.
Yeah. So once I realized that so many women could connect with me or even men could connect with what I had been through, I think the biggest thing I've always done was just get into as many doors as I could to share my story and do what I could on social media to share it. I have connected with our local shelter now and I'm going through the advocacy training because I'm at a point where I want to be out volunteering and everything. But I feel like for the past couple of years, I have just been kind of figuring out my own way through it, really. I didn't really know where to go as far as mentorship on how to, you know, drive the boat through this wave, I guess, if you want to call it.
You're still pretty early in your advocacy journey. Would you agree with that?
I would. I would say this is the beginning for me. Like, this is where I wanted to start. I feel like for a while, I pretended I was okay and didn't realize what I had to go through to get to the point where I could do advocacy. There was a 2-year point where I lived by myself, and that was where I found most healing. I went through all the stages of grief, anger, sadness, happiness, depression, like just everything you can think of. And I think I'm finally at the point where I've learned that I can and I deserve to live life, and I deserve to be able to be in this world, in this advocacy. Whatever this is for me that's meant for me will find me, and I'll find it soon.
Well, and you talk about that ebb and flow too. Kara has shared this many times that I'm fine. And it's more than a decade later where she's like, maybe I'm not. Whereas I think I was confronted so heavily with no way you're not fine by everyone around me early on that I was forced to kind of deal with those things, whether I wanted to or not. And we had a lot of collective healing among us, which would have included like my family and friends. And then I started out advocacy journey, and it's a very short time period where I'm like, I'm able to speak about this. And you talk about the ebb and flow, which is the same way that I felt like I'm on top of the world and I can do these trainings and I release my name to the media. And then, oh my God, why am I now feeling this big dip, like more of a victim than I ever have before? And that builds back up. And there are still days where, you know, Kara and I both, we don't feel like survivors, say, we feel like victims. I like to pull my covers over my head and watch Twilight and not brush my teeth. Like, leave me alone for the day.
And I eat snacks. a lot of snacks.
You eat snacks on your survivor days too.
I eat snacks all the time, but maybe I eat more on my bad days, okay?
You know, you season them with the salt of your tears.
I like snacks. I like extra salty chips.
Extra salty. But I hate the healing's not linear. No shit. It's like massive coloring lines by a toddler on a piece of paper. And it's going to go all over the place. And just because you have a setback someday, some time period, doesn't mean that what you're doing isn't important. And it's not as if it's taking away from everything that you've already done. You being here today is an incredible act of bravery, especially being able to stand up for yourself and put words to such an awful story that somebody else did to you. And now here you are owning all of the things that you get to become after the fact. That's beautiful. And it deserves to be celebrated. You are incredible.
Oh, thank you.
No, I mean, we genuinely mean these things when we say them. And I think it's so important to show up in all those ebbs and flows as well, because we often hear all of these platitudes, which is everything will be fine and everything happens for a reason. And yes, you can find reason very often. And the thing that I've sort of adapted saying is like, you can find reason if you're lucky, if you're privileged, if you have support, if you find ways to heal, then yeah, you can probably find some reason in something bad that happens to you. But not everybody gets to that point. And I find so much value in people sharing where they are in that journey and be like, man, I got a bad day today. Because we're talking 22 years ago when I was kidnapped, I didn't see anyone who was dealing with things. And honestly, I didn't see anyone who was publicly dealing with things the way I did ever. And it was just one day I was like, I'm not fine 15 years later. So it's valuable to show up in the mess, I think, if we're able. And so we honor you doing that because it's so important. It's so valuable. And that is advocacy work in and of itself. So don't undervalue the advocacy work that you're already doing just in showing up and being like, I'm kind of a mess today. Like, that's so important.
That someone, at least one person, is going to listen to that and be endlessly thankful mm-hmm. that you were able to still show up and be here, even if you're not feeling 100%. I would love to share something with you, and I don't know if you've seen this or not. I put out a little something. I know Kara had mentioned it, but you said that this was the time period when that happened, October or fall. And it's weird the way that things hit us in different waves or at different time periods. Mine is in May, and it also coincides with my mom's birthday. I have in the past done some things to commemorate that. We use it as now a celebration. So a way to say, like, look how far we've come. And I was doing a TikTok video series and editing all of these, and it took a lot of time. And my daughter, who was 6 by then or so, came back and was asking what I was doing. They know very high level, like, what happened, especially at that point. None of the details, more like, oh, he went to jail and that kind of stuff. And I was explaining just a little bit, this is what I'm doing. It's about this day. Oh, that's the day that you were really brave. That's your brave day. And I, like, it was one of those moments that I think of now as kind of before and after, because I could never find, oh, and I just gave my own self chills. But I never stopped to think of it that way. It's like none of the words felt right, but that is the day that I chose to be brave. This is the day that you were brave and that you had a guardian angel there and that you were able to pick yourself back up. That's your brave day. And just the reframing of that, where it's not something somebody took. It's the day that I learned that I had to stand up for myself. So feel free to use that wording as you like, but we get it. Especially with the time of year, it can be tough.
Take that shit back, though.
Mm-hmm. It's yours.
That's beautiful. I love that. And I'll forever call it my brave day from now on.
Is it not? Like, I need to... Don't steal it. I promise I'm going to do something with it. Okay? Like, but yeah, it has just always... Even and when I talk about it still, of course, it's out of the mouth of like a kindergartner to be able to just plainly state it that way.
They give the most wise advice, though.
For real.
Okay, so we all have something in common, though, which is that we utilized TikTok specifically to share a lot of our stories. So that's how, like, I first became aware of your story. That's how Kim and I met. And so I'm not consuming TikTok. Like, I've got to step back. I got to, like, take my take my mouth off the fire hose for a little bit. Kim's like, stop it. Every episode I say something, Kim's like,
that's what she said.
I'm so sorry. I am not mature enough. Anyway, are you still on TikTok putting out content?
Yeah. So I used to get this weird anxiety every time I posted. It's crazy. I would literally feel like I was going to vomit. Like as soon as I would post it, just anxiety. Like it's so bad. But now I feel like I'm at the point where I can post stuff and not have to worry about the hate or whatever you want to call it. So yes, I am trying to ease my way back onto it.
How did you leverage that? What's your experience been like? I mean, you're talking about getting really nervous, but what did that first look like when you really started gaining some traction?
It felt empowering. Like it was something I had never felt before. And it wasn't about the numbers or anything like that. It was just the fact that, like I said earlier, people hear me, people relate to me, and I'm not alone. I'm not insane. I actually went through something and that was validated. It was a good feeling other than, you know, the few comments here and there. But at the end of the day, it was so worth it.
Yeah, I have found that TikTok is an interesting place these days. One of the things that I am finding is when I go and try to speak about other things, all anyone wants to talk about is this one thing that happened. And so one of the things that I am constantly saying on TikTok, I'm like, I'm a lot more than just this one thing that happened. We want to talk about more than this. Like, we want to talk about who you are. Like, yes, what has been in your experience? What other things are you enjoying doing and sharing on TikTok? But like, the least interesting thing we always say is what somebody else chose to do to you. So tell us more about you.
So I just love this right now. About 2 years ago, I met a man that was on vacation where I was living at the time, and we ended up hitting it off, and I moved across the country, which is so funny to say, but I flew across the country and never went back home, and we've been together for 2 years now. So I took a chance on that, even despite everything else. Like, this is the best decision I've ever made, was moving out here. I'm saying this all because I've learned so much in the last 2 years. And that goes from unlearning unhealthy habits of love to learning how to be loved and how to love healthily. I've been out here learning how to snowboard, so many new hiking spots, just like kind of reclaiming and relearning who I want to be and just getting out into nature and doing things and having experiences that I deserve to have that I didn't realize and didn't realize it was something that I could go and do.
It's amazing how much healing can happen, one, in reclaiming joy. So that's one of the things that I think I leaned into without even recognizing what I was doing necessarily. A lot of my healing journey has been just me trying to figure shit out on my own because I didn't have access to therapy at the time. And so joy was one of the things that initially I was seeking. And I love that you're like, I learned a new sport. Like, I'm hiking, I'm spending time in nature. Oh, and also I'm learning how to love myself and be loved. You have to learn how to find joy, first of all, and you have to learn how to love yourself before you can be loved. If you're comfortable talking about any of those things or what it's been like to be in a healthy relationship, then we would love to hear just kind of like, it gives maybe someone hope who hasn't gotten to that point yet. So up to you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I just couldn't tell you how amazing it's been. Just to be loved so gently, I think, is the biggest thing. Like, you need to go do what you need to do to heal. You need to go do what you need to do to make you happy. Like, obviously, everyone has boundaries, right? But there's no setbacks to the limits of what me as a person, I don't even know if this makes sense, but what I can go do, you know? Like, he's not going to hold me back from, if I need to go speak to a million people right now, he's going to let me go do that. If I need to, just whatever I need to do for my healing journey.
So that, I don't know if this makes you feel more comfortable or less, but Kara and I have both been in, we'll call it what it is, domestic violence relationships as well. That's not the thing that we talk about the most on the podcast, but that's why this topic is so important to us and talking about the ways that we speak about love and relationships and honoring yourself. And so I heard you saying, he's going to let me go do that. And I still catch myself doing that. And it's something that you're wired to think that way. And then you realize that he's not letting you. He's encouraging you. He's standing boldly behind you, encouraging. And hey, if this doesn't go well, I'm going to be here and catch you, but you got to do this for yourself. I think that's what I've come to realize is he's not letting me do anything. He is standing with me and being a teammate and I get to be my full, complete self in every phase of life and have that complemented in what he's doing as well. That's what healthy relationships look like. It's not that we never fight. That's not like conflict. You have to be able to have conflict and you have to find ways to navigate that, especially. So I loved how you're speaking about him. And it's like, ooh, on the heartstrings, because I feel that so deeply. I totally get it. And it's sort of rewiring process that'll probably take your entire life.
Yeah. One of the things that I come back to time and time again, I was told that no one else was ever going to love me. No one else was ever going to want to be in a relationship with me. And I never had confidence issues before I was in that relationship. I wasn't like the most confident person in the room, but I never thought that I was like scum on the bottom of someone's shoe. But eventually, after years of hearing that, I was like, yeah, nobody else is going to love me. So that being loved just as you are, and I love that you said being loved gently, because that's just like,
oh, I know.
That come with, it's so healing and it's so amazing. And it really is, you have to learn a new narrative. And I think about like the psychology of it specifically. Okay, so fun fact, pretty much everyone who majors in psychology really just has trauma. Two psychology majors here. But I will never forget in psychology learning about the strongest way to reinforce a behavior, and it is sporadic reinforcement. So it's this idea that you don't know when you're going to get positively reinforced or negatively reinforced. And so that's actually the strongest way to reinforce a behavior. And so it takes, when you're talking about this constant love, this constant gentle love, it kind of takes longer to rewire than it took to imprint in the first place.
I think my personality, I've always been, I was outgoing at a younger age, but I think I've always been kind of quiet. And I'm realizing now that like, you guys are so well-spoken and things like that and so educated. And I think I'm at that point, you said, at what point in your advocacy are you at now? I feel like I'm at the point where I want to get there. You know, like I am so inspired by you guys. And it's not that I see what I'm not, but I see where I want to be. But my education is something that I feel like I want to claim back here soon, because when my last attack had happened, I was a month and a half into college and I never had the confidence, or I don't want to say the care, but to go back to school and to do better for myself. And I feel like that's really important for survivors to be able to claim that moment back of the things that you do deserve. And like, I'm no less, like to go to college and get that education and be able to speak as well as you. I'm just using you guys, for example, like it's just so inspiring to listen to you speak. And I don't know.
We're all so old.
Well, if you're old, I want to look like you when I get older.
Listen, I am currently making a sizzle reel, for lack of a better term, of all of my keynote speaking and like things that I'm doing for keynote speaking. And I pulled up, I think it's actually my first keynote, not even a keynote, it was a speech. And I'm watching it and I'm like, this is so painful.
Is that the one where you have super blonde hair and you're standing behind a podium? Oh,
I have so much hair. Just to say, we were not good always.
I don't know if I believe that, but I might have to watch the clip.
Well, and it's just, I look at those and I'm like, my voice is a higher pitch, number one. I have bleach blonde hair in mine, but my messages are still the same. And there are a lot of things that I still say today that I knew in my heart, even the moments after this assault occurred. Mm-hmm. And it's just simply honing your message and deciding, what do you want other people to know? Why are you doing this at your core? And I think that you are well beyond your years in answering those questions. And I would love to hear, very selfishly, of course, I want to hear more about She Rises.
Yeah, She Rises is something that I sat in my bedroom and couldn't get out of my head when the assault first happened. I was pretty much couldn't leave my house for, I'd say maybe 2 months. And all I could think was, she rises, she rises. Like I just kept repeating it. And so it kind of came not my slogan, but like what I live by, like she rises, she fought her battles the best she could and she wears her scars as wings. Because at 18 years old, I became physically disfigured, if you want to call it. And so I just had no idea how I was going to show my face in the world again. So I just told myself, I said, stay kind, stay strong, and rise above what you're going through. That as a compact just stayed with me for the last 7 years. years and has really gotten me to today. I feel like it's so important to know that what's on the inside is so much more important than anything on the outside. Not that I was ever some, you know, Miss USA, but I wasn't scarred by the hands of somebody else. And I feel like just overcoming that, I just had to rise. There was no other option. So in 2020, we published a book called She Rises with co-author Lisa Devine. And it's basically, it just tells my story. Because I had jokingly said one day on an Instagram story that I wanted to write a book by the time I turned 21. Never thought it would happen. And I think it was the day before or something we published it. And so it was just like a goal marked off the list to share my story in a different way and have a handbook at the end of it to kind of overcome, you know, different ways to overcome what you had gone through.
What are some of the things that you would talk about, say it's in your speech or just friends sitting around a coffee shop? What are some of those things that you would impart as knowledge?
Yeah, I would say the biggest thing is writing down how you're feeling. This sounds really silly, but like I catch myself even to this day, like just sitting down, writing random things in my notes, just how I'm feeling so I can look back on them. And, you know, you just kind of work your way through it through, I don't want to call it your own therapy, but your own note therapy. So yeah, that's one of the biggest things I would say to help you overcome, just like some simple little.
I think that that's probably so helpful for people that are like you were, like I was, who are like, I'm fine. You get so used to just saying, no, I'm fine. And like shutting down feelings. And I think a lot of people probably learn that as a coping mechanism very early on in their childhood. I think that that is a commonality that a lot of people who are like, no, I'm good. I'm fine. It's because you didn't have a choice. Like when you were younger and things were happening, I can see how sitting down with a journal that you know no one else is going to read and just letting a stream of consciousness flow through a pen could be so incredibly healing and helpful, because it's like, I don't know how I feel sometimes. And I just have to like start talking. Then I'm like, there it is.
Yeah. Or even like I just told you, like I just bought a microphone so I could sit here and do my own little audio documentary, just document every little feeling. Like when I'm having those bad moments, I think I've just figured out that that's one of the best things for me is just putting it somewhere, even if it's not to somebody else, just putting it somewhere where you can stuff it away and even revisit in a couple, you know, weeks, months, years, and just see how far you came really.
First of all, it's very healing, obviously, because sometimes when you feel like you're rolling a boulder up a hill and you're like, where, I'm not getting anywhere, then you can look back at it. For me, I learned about this specifically in a biblical context where it's like Ebenezers were built in the desert to remind God's people of his faithfulness. And so it's a little bit like these Ebenezers in our healing journey also, where we can look back and say, oh, there's a time I overcame. Oh, there's a time that I was strong. There's a time that I felt like, what am I doing? I feel like I'm not making any progress. And then you can see that. So I love that you gave people like that advice. And I think it's so helpful.
So as you're talking about journaling, because I know Kara does a lot of journaling as well. I wrote a lot before, even while court was going on and such. And there was a point in time where I stopped, and it coincides with another large life event. But I wonder if either of you have ever felt this way, where suddenly I felt like my own thoughts weren't safe. And if I put them down on paper or type them out, they would be used against me. I more thought of that from, I'm thinking, oh, well, what if my opinions change or something? But in reality, when I look back on it now, it's that any weakness when it comes to a domestic violence relationship can be weaponized against you. Your compassion, your empathy, your understanding, all of the things that make you a soft-hearted, kind, good person are in turn used against you. And I stopped writing. And I have just very recently finally come back around to the point where I'm like, it's safe to have these thoughts. It's safe to say them. It's safe to write them. It's safe to share them. So as we are talking about this ebb and flow, that's one of those that I am just getting to. And we are coming up on 20-ish years of my fun trauma cycle. But I wonder, is that making any sense to anyone out there?
Totally. I don't think that I identify with like the weaponization necessarily, but I do find it difficult sometimes because I do still have this narrative, even though I've been trying to rewrite it. My narrative is I'm strong. Strong people aren't impacted. I can't have feelings. So like that's so ingrained in me that it's almost like I'm embarrassed still. I'm like embarrassed to have feelings. I'm like, I can't even admit them to myself. Ha ha ha. So that's my version of that.
I think that I sometimes just find shame in the whole situation altogether. Like, it makes me feel like I'm still caught in the past almost. And I feel like when I write it down, I feel like it's a safe, I'm just going to say it's a safe space for me because I feel like I can actually articulate my words. I feel like when I speak, which is, for some reason, speaking is my biggest goal, but I really struggle with it. And I'm kind of realizing that right now. I don't articulate my words how I can on a piece of paper, I feel like. So I don't know. It's kind of like an escape for me. I'll put it that way. So I guess to answer your question, no, I haven't noticed that. I may pay attention in the future to see if I do have any of those feelings, but I haven't noticed that so far.
I'm wondering too, if it was because the places that I would have written down were shared spaces. The best that I felt was moving out onto my own for the very first time, living with Mike aside. But when I got that very first place, that was what you're talking about, where you're at right now with I'm learning who I am again. What do I like just for me? Who am I? And I think the biggest part about finding a healthy relationship, it doesn't have to do with a partner at all. It's finding the healthy relationship with yourself, falling in love with yourself and life in general again.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that. I feel like one of the hardest decisions I ever made was moving away from my family and everything that I knew. But I feel like it was the absolute best thing I could have ever done because I get to recreate who I am here, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Because nobody knows who I am. Nobody knows what I've been through. Unlike where I came from, like everybody, I remember I'd go to work and I was a server and people would be like, oh my God, that's like Kayla. She's the girl that had her lip bit off, you know? And I felt like an animal in a cage. So I feel like where I'm at now, and I'm constantly being fed such love and care and just all the good things. It's just a completely different experience. And I don't know, it's one of the best experiences I could possibly go through at this point in my life, I think.
So tell our listeners, if you got to impart one thing to them, what would be your call to action?
Yeah, I'm actually going to read it to you because yes. I wrote it out beforehand. So as we've discussed, our scars, both visible and invisible, can become our wings, lifting us towards healing and empowerment. I just want to urge you to embrace your journey and wear your scars proudly, knowing they are symbols of resilience. If you or someone you know is struggling with the effects of abuse, I'd urge you to seek support and share your story because I believe that truly together we can create a community of healing and strength and to show the world that our past does not define us. Instead, we can propel us into a brighter, more powerful future. So that would be my call to action.
I love it. And it so well aligns with like everything that we say and what we do. Not that it matters. Like you could say something that doesn't align. We don't care. We like being challenged here. But yes, I love that. And not defined. So my little like thing that I come back to again and again and again is that I'm not defined by this thing that happened. And so like yours is she rises and mine is not defined. So when you said that, I was like, I also say that. So that is awesome.
Is there anything that's still on your heart that you want to share?
Yeah. So when I was in high school, I would go to school with black and blue on my face and nobody asked any questions, right? I think that it's laid heavy on my heart to share that even asking somebody if they're okay could save a life. Such a small thing, you know, just to walk by someone and be like, hey, are you okay? When you notice something different about them. But I feel like that could have been a turning point for me. And I would just urge you to pay more attention to those around you and just ask the simple questions.
And just to like add on to that, be okay with people saying, no, I'm not okay. Mm-hmm. I think our society is getting better about it. But I think so often people are like, hey, how you doing? And if you say anything other than I'm good, or, you know, someone says, are you okay? And you're like, not really. They're like, okay. Right. So like ask it, but also
listen,
care.
Yeah.
And listen. Mm-hmm.
We talked pretty recently about knowing. You just know when something's authentic. It's the same thing when you ask authentically. And I need to take my own advice, I know, but to answer authentically, I am not good about it at all.
Stop masking, Kim.
Oh my gosh.
I'll give you a little bit of autism. I'll send it your way.
I'm not good about in the moment saying, oh my God, I'm not doing so hot. Cause I hate pity. I hate that look. I hate anyone thinking that I can't take care of it myself. And so I've really tried to be like, shit sucks. I'm gonna cry about it a little, but then I'll figure it out. So ask authentically, answer authentically.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's such helpful advice. And I mean, realistically, everybody's going to have bad days. Everybody's going to go through stuff. And I say that at least once a week on social media. I'm like, nobody gets out of life unscathed. Like we all go through something difficult. yeah, just have the compassion to understand other people's stuff. And one of the things that always lays really, really heavily on my heart whenever we have these conversations around domestic violence is, and I'm not sure if I've told this story specifically on the podcast before, but I was working at the Sheriff's Department. I was working in victims advocacy. And one of the jobs that we had as victims advocates is to go and sign the arrest warrants from the people that were arrested the night before at the jail. So, you know, they would get arrested in action. The arrest warrant was written later. We'd have to go sign the warrants. I remember going into the jail and all of the staff there being like, you're not going to believe this case that came in last night. And trigger warning, this is pretty insane. A man essentially had beat his wife and had poured gasoline all over her and was standing over her with a match and said, you know, I'm going to light you on fire. And so luckily law enforcement intervened, arrested him. And there's a few moments in my law enforcement career that are strongly imprinted into my brain. And this is one of the ones that's like the strongest, because I remember everyone in the office being like, can you believe this? Like, why was she with someone like that? Why was she with someone like that? Right. So first of all, what was she doing? And it's women, this is men, this is like five or six people in the office. And I remember looking at them and saying, well, you know, he didn't start, like, that wasn't their first date. They don't start that way. Because if they did, who's staying? Like, if you go on a date and somebody's like, baby, I'm gonna pour gasoline on you and set you on fire, you're gonna be like, okay, serial killer, goodbye. Even I would pick up that vibe.
Are we sure?
Yes.
Are we sure? She's not great at picking those up. We've established this.
I'm terrible at picking up serial killer vibes. Finger guns. But that's just always something that lays heavy on my heart when we have these conversations about domestic violence, because so many people don't understand. And I hope and I pray that there is enough information and education that has been happening the last several years that people are beginning to understand it more. But I tell that story and I add that to this just to give people more context on what it is like to be in these relationships. Because when people look at you and they're like, why are you with him? You're like, I don't know, but I can't get out of it. And I say that to honor the bravery of the people who have gotten out, because it takes, on average, a minimum of 7 to 10 times trying to leave before someone who is being abused is successful. And very often, the success happens at the hands of violence by the offender and sometimes death of the victim. And so I just want to give that context for anyone who may be struggling listening to these stories and maybe struggling with compassion, with understanding how people get into these relationships. I am very glad that you don't understand it. People who don't understand it. So that's what's on my heart.
Once you do get out of it, do not go to that last meet. I feel like that's
danger.
Yeah, that's when my incident occurred. And I just feel like if I could tell you one thing, do not go to that last meet. It's when your life could change forever.
There is a fantastic TED Talk that I will find before this publishes, and plenty of research to back this, that final meet is typically where lethality is most likely to occur. And this gal that put this TED Talk forth, I believe she is the researcher that says, you know, the final step is often homicide. And you can sit there and question all of the things. Why? Well, what intervening services are we offering? What are we doing to better that situation before that? Because are you just saying they're crying out for help? Are you just saying that you shouldn't be in that and it makes me uncomfortable, but I don't want to get my hands dirty? It's not my business. There's two sides to every story. What did you do to help before that 7th time? What did you do to intervene and be a safe place before that last meeting? Keep those things in mind when you're asking and answering authentically too, because that last meeting that you're talking about, no one could have stopped you from going to that. You didn't know.
Yeah. Also, it can be, as someone who has been on the outside of these relationships as well, looking in, it is difficult and it is, I'm going to call it what it is exhausting to be a support person when you're like, I did everything and she went back anyway. But you just have to keep being there. You just have to let it be known. Nothing you can do will ever change the fact that I am here when you are ready. And you can't make that person leave until they're ready. It's the most exhausting, frustrating space to be in, but it's so important and it makes it so much easier when someone does decide and then they have that voice to be like, don't go to that meeting. I don't care if they're saying they have all your stuff. You don't need that stuff. I'll buy you new stuff. Because it's always the stuff. It's like, oh, well, I found this stuff that belongs to you and I want to give it to you before I go away. It's like, I don't need that.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point because my mom and I went through a really rough patch during this relationship. It was obviously to the point where it was him or her, and she tried everything. And I'm not saying she like was trying to force me away from him, but she was doing everything in her power, like, you need to leave. And of course, I didn't see what she saw. And like, it's just crazy. Of course, but we both know now, you offer like, hey, this. And if I was a mom, you ain't going out of the house, you know? So I can't even imagine. But being there for support rather than trying to force it is, for the person that's in the situation, more beneficial rather than you do what you can, you know?
I was wondering, it's always my stance not to ask. You're sharing whatever you want. But my mama heart was just cracking wide open. And I can't imagine how she felt as well, because that's probably a lot of trauma for her. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't even say that it's vicarious trauma, because she's experiencing her own kind of maternal trauma throughout that, watching her daughter go through this. And I'm sure she had a hard time ever trying to go on vacation again too.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say we're closer than we've ever been before now. The situation obviously made us grow closer than I could have ever even asked for. But we grew up together, you know, so it was hard, you know, trying to navigate my first relationship and her understanding. And then once it went south, understanding that she did want the best for me, I always thought it was like a thing where I don't want my baby to flee the nest. So it was just, I don't know, really important to know that your loved ones have the best in mind for you and they're not just crazy. They may be a little crazy, but...
It depends on who we're talking about.
Good, crazy.
So tell our listeners, if they would like to follow you, keep up with your work, where's the best place to find you?
Yeah, I would say Instagram at SheRisesWKaylaH, or you can just go to SheRisesWithKaylaHayes.com, and that has everything listed.
Perfect. And we're going to link the book as well in our show notes. Be sure to pick that up. But I really, really am thankful that you chose to share with us today and open your heart in a way that I just feel very honored that you chose to do that with us.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for letting me have a little therapy session, if you will. I feel much better leaving this.
Oh, good.
Anytime.
Survivor's Guide to True Crime is hosted and executive produced by Kimberly Corbin Rourke and Kara Robinson Chamberlain. If you love what we do here, please don't forget to follow, rate, and review the show in your podcast player. It's an easy and free way to help us and help more people find the show. To learn more about the guests featured or to find resources and information discussed on the show, visit SurvivorsGuideToTrueCrime.com. Thanks for listening.
Well, see you later.